WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Although terrorists have said they are on a holy war against the United States and have used the Quran to justify their actions, many scholars and Islamic religious leaders agree that this is a profound misinterpretation of the Quran. We called Karen Armstrong, one of the world's leading religion scholars. She's the author of Islam, A Short History, as well as The History of God and The Battle for God, which is a history of fundamentalism. What's been going through your mind as you watch Islam being used as a rationale for terrorist attacks that have killed thousands of people?
Well, I'm completely heartbroken by it and sickened, devastated, and sad. I'm particularly sad because when I think of the Prophet Muhammad, his mission was precisely to stop this kind of killing. When he was living in the 7th century in Arabia, the whole of his society was caught up in an endless bloodbath. Nobody felt safe. And he was able to bring peace to that part of the world, and so that people could congregate together peacefully and begin the service of God. So that to watch this peace-loving ethic, and the word Islam is related to the word salam for peace, this is just an awful indication of the way we can take something that is good and healthy and somehow distort it. It's a very sad comment on human nature.
Is there anything that you can find in the Quran that justifies the acts of terror that we saw last week?
There are one or two ferocious passages, and one in particular, which is quoted by the chief suspect, Osama bin Laden, which has to the effect that you must hunt out unbelievers wherever they are and kill them. But then, of course, we go on to say that God always forgives. These things are often quoted out of context. But there are no more of these ferocious passages in the Quran than there are in either the Jewish scriptures or the Christian scriptures. So basically, it's not really just that people read a verse from the Quran and rush out to implement it. The fundamentalists in the Sunni world, that the Sunni Islam being the chief form of Islam, of the majority, tend to follow a program that is based on the life of the Prophet Muhammad. They see Muhammad as leaving the godless society of his day, withdrawing from it, and then beginning a jihad, a holy war, to conquer that society and impose Islam by force. And so they say we must follow the same pattern. We must also withdraw into our camps or special enclaves or special concentrations of society. We must prepare ourselves, and then we must engage in an all-out jihad. Now, this is entirely to distort the meaning of the Prophet's own life, because the Prophet was fighting. He was fighting a desperate war of self-defense because his community was faced with the prospect of extermination. But he, at the very moment when he knew that he was no longer, that his community was no longer in danger of being killed, then he stopped all violence and achieved the final conquest by a most ingenious form and brave and inspired form of a campaign of nonviolence. He put himself unarmed into the enemy hands and conquered Mecca, finally, without shedding a single drop of blood. The Quran makes it very clear that there must be no coercion in religion. So, of course, by following this program, by making it so aggressive, fundamentalists in Islam, like fundamentalists in other faiths, too, are distorting and perverting the originally pacific message of the religion.
How is Muhammad said to have brought peace through nonviolence?
He did it in an extraordinary way. The Muslims had been fighting with their backs to the wall, but then with against the most powerful state, most powerful city in the Arabian Peninsula. But then suddenly Muhammad said, announced that he was going to go on the Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca. At the time, he was living in Medina, some 250 miles to the north. And every year, Arabs from all over the peninsula would gather in the holy city of Mecca to make the Hajj pilgrimage. And the essential thing about the Hajj is it must be peaceful. Nobody may carry arms. And so Muhammad and 1,000 of his Muslims went absolutely unarmed, wearing the pilgrim's dress, into the city of Mecca and said, now we are peaceful pilgrims. The Meccans could easily have killed them, but that would have been to violate the traditions of the Hajj. And so they sat down and they talked and they worked out a solution. And as a result of that peace treaty made in these extraordinary conditions, conditions that were considered very unpopular by the Muslims. They were yearning to fight, but Muhammad said, no, peace is the thing. Non-violence is the thing. The Meccans eventually opened their doors to him voluntarily. They realized that their policies were outdated.
Any final words you'd like to leave us with?
Yes, there's something I would like to share with people, and this may be too soon, because we're still rocked with grief and horror. But I am naturally, as a theologian, I'm desperately concerned about the way religion has been abused in this. And somehow we've got to make sure that religion, that religious practice somehow makes this hideous event brings some kind of healing to the situation. And I've been thinking hard about it, about the events of the 11th of September and the spectacle of it. And I don't expect, this is a long process, and perhaps people could just store it away while they go through their grief, their anger, their rage, but to think about for later. It seems to me that this is a revelation. The word revelation means an unveiling, that a veil has been stripped away, and we now see a reality that we didn't see before. And we are now seeing our predicament in the world in an entirely new way. We're seeing that we are not in isolation from the rest of the world. We are one people. We cannot, in our privileged countries, cut ourselves off from the rest of the world. Shortly, just before this outrage, this hideous, evil atrocity, the main item in British news was our asylum seekers. People were making desperate attempts, night after night, to cross the Channel and come to Britain. And we were trying to keep them out. Suddenly, we had a sense of Britain as a little privileged fortress trying to keep out these hordes that were clamoring to come in. And now we're beginning to see that we're not a fortress. We're not cut off from the rest of the world in our privilege. In some terrible way, the world will come to us.
Well, Karen Armstrong, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Karen Armstrong recorded from London. She's the author of several books about religion, including Islam, A Short History. This is Fresh Air.